So Steve Jobs almost killed me today. Steve Jobs. Yep.
By his own hand?
Well, by his voice.
He does have a voice, a striking voice.
I had an appointment this morning at 10, and or it was like 10:15. So when the lovely keynote started this morning, I was in the car, and I had the live blogging going on my phone as I was driving on the freeway. So pretty much every 5 seconds, I was turning my head away from the road, and luckily, I made it to my destination.
That's safe. You know, there's a law. There's laws in California against that kind of thing, Scott.
Well, I wasn't texting. I was just reading. Are there laws against reading? There should be.
There should be, actually, yeah. That's that great thing about California
because
that's
law. Worse.
You know, I can't text. Okay, I'll just email. Well, you can't email, then you can't.
I'm just going to read.
Did you wear a Bluetooth headset, wireless? Were you hands free?
I was hands free.
I think you win.
I skirted the law.
I think you win.
Woohoo.
Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, it is June 6, 2011. Welcome to a special Monday night edition of Tech Bacon, WWDC Special Edition.
Ba-da!
We have our own theme music.
Yes.
Once again, let's say it again. WWDC Special Edition.
Ba-da!
Ooh, one more time. WWDC Special Edition.
Ba-da!
Doon, 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 doon. Anyway,
This is weird. This is weird to be here without it being the morning, and I'm not tired. Although I actually am tired at the end of the day, but I don't have my coffee. It feels strange.
I'm not highly caffeinated. The trademark of Tech Bacon, a highly caffeinated podcast. We are not at the moment.
Well, it's a good thing because we have a lot to go through.
Yeah. Well, also it's a good thing because I want to sleep at some point this evening.
Yeah, that would be bad. You'd be doing podcasts in your sleep, or as you're lying in bed, you'd be going over the podcast.
New podcast. Yeah, that is awesome. Anyway, what brings us here on this Monday?
This lovely Monday.
This morning, Apple had their Worldwide Developer Conference keynote hosted by Steve Jobs and other executives over at Apple, where they announced iOS 5. They detailed, previewed iOS 5, Mac OS X Lion, and iCloud at long last.
Yes. So all the things that we were waiting for last week, we now have more information about.
Exactly. Really, really cool, really exciting day. Basically, in a certain sense, laid out Apple's strategic vision of the next, 5 to 10 years of the company.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and one thing they said that was really important, there's a lot of stuff to cover here today. But in terms of philosophical stuff, they opened it up with 10 years ago. They basically put the Mac forward as the digital hub of your lifestyle. You know, basically said you're going to go out, your Mac houses all your music, your Mac houses all your video, you plug in all your devices to that, and basically everything goes from that. What they did today is they basically said through improvements in, iOS 5, through iCloud, things like that, they basically said that the Mac is no longer the center of your hub. It is no longer the center of your digital life. It is simply another device that accesses your digital life, and that digital life is centered in the cloud, in iCloud.
Going to be a very big shift in how people use their devices and their computer.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
a fundamental change of the way we kind of look at the way we use our devices, where it's, this whole notion of a post-PC world and what does that mean, and how you use things. It's really, really exciting because it's enormous potential right now. And right now we're on the brink of it. It's kind of like looking into where things are going to go out.
Before we talk about it, tell everybody about that video you saw the other day from like 1997 or whatever it was.
Oh yeah, this was great.
It's kind of fascinating because it ties this all in.
Made the rounds over the weekend on Twitter. People were posting and whatnot. I think Mac Rumors had it up. Basically, it was a developer conference in 1996. Basically, after Steve Jobs had come back to Apple when they bought it and they acquired Next, but Gil Amelio was still the CEO, so he wasn't the new head of the company yet. He was just there as a as Steve Jobs. Yeah. And so basically he came out, seemed like it was like the last day of the conference, and it was just a room full of developers. And he was talking about, what his vision was for Apple, what they would do with certain things. I mean, even as far as like saying what his strategy for clones were, because that's when they had, Mac clones.
Right.
But one thing he brought up was that when he was at Next, and this is the time when he was with Next and Pixar and a bunch of different companies. He basically said, I have one computer, and basically has all my stuff, but I need access to all those different things at 5 or 6 different locations. So what they did next, and this is very ahead of the curve at the time.
Oh yeah.
They basically had everybody at Next, they basically had their personal data, their home folders, what have you, stored on a server. And basically that data would be accessible in any of his computers. So he would sit down at Pixar or at his house or at his office at Next, and then at that time at his office at Apple, and log in, and it would be the same computer with all of his files, all of his data, all of his applications, everything right there. And he was talking about how he wanted to go and bring that to the consumer. Like, that's something he thought would be great for regular people to go and use.
And this is 97?
96.
96. We're close. That's almost 15 years ago.
Yeah.
It's a really
At that time, it was very bleeding edge. And what's interesting is now we're starting to go and see the manifestation of that actual strategy come to light with these products. And now we're at the very, very cusp of it actually starting to happen. And the first thing they talked about was OS X Lion. We've talked a little bit what they previewed before, what's in store with that. They went a little bit more in depth to certain things, and we'll just kind of go over the different items.
Yeah, we'll go over the features. We'll comment a little bit on it just to get everybody out there some knowledge. What's up? What's going on? If you didn't watch the keynote, what we think about it?
And there's a lot to be excited about. Basically, the first thing that kind of denoted was multi-touch gestures is the big use of multi-touch in the new version of OS X. And one of the things they wanted to do is they wanted to bring stuff in from iOS. And so from four-finger swiping and that kind of thing, they wanted to go and bring in touch gestures, pinch to zoom, all the stuff you kind of are used to on your mobile device, on your iOS device or Android device, is now going to come to the Mac OS. And we're going to see this obviously too with Windows 8. And like I think,
and we kind of all saw this coming. When they came out with the touchpad. It made sense. It's like, why would you be coming out with a device like that?
The magic trackpad or whatever. Yeah.
Wasn't that called touchpad?
I think the touchpad is the HP tablet.
What is
I think they call it the magic trackpad because it's Apple. Therefore it's magic.
Right.
Obviously.
Of course.
Obviously.
Yes. Okay.
We totally saw this coming in, and it makes a lot of sense. It doesn't make sense when you're using a mouse, but like you said, with that trackpad, then you knew there was going to be a push to that.
Right.
They have the big trackpads on the laptops and portables now. So that was a big push. And that also tied in really nicely with these full screen apps that they're doing. Basically, everything in OS X is going to have full screen capability kind of built in, which is going to change the way developers need to go and think about their applications. And it's a big shift from what has been the standard interface paradigm for the Macintosh since day one in 1984.
Well, really, for any computer, Windows has had full screen, but not full screen. There's always been
still have the start bar, the taskbar.
Still have the start bar there. Yeah. I mean, it did fill the whole screen, but you still have the start bar. So these apps running, there's full screen.
There's no Mac file edit, bar at the top. It's literally just app from top, to bottom of your screen. Much more. I mean, it turns your desktop into a modal device, much like an iPhone or an iPad, basically.
Yeah.
Which when we talked about this last week, at first you're like, I don't want that because I want to be able to do all this other stuff. But except for certain use cases, oftentimes having something be full screen is good. And like in a way, a lot of pro Mac apps have already started, taking this on, like Logic, like Final Cut Pro. They already operate like that, not by losing the title bar,
right?
But they've kind of like started to take that approach where it kind of builds it in, and the new new iPhoto basically does that.
One thing
well.
I wonder is like with full screen implementations is when I really like switching between the applications I have open, and I don't always remember what I have open, So it's when you're in a full screen mode, you have to go somewhere else to even just know what you have open. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's not, it's just not sitting there in the dock or in the taskbar or whatever. So you can just quickly glance and go, oh yeah, I do have that open over here. You actually have to do a command or a swipe or whatever to actually see the open applications.
Right. Well, and that's where Mission Control comes in.
Right.
Which is basically a combination of like Spaces and Expose. Basically like a really, really evolved window management
But you're still
system.
Going, so like that's the thing. You're still going
to a different place to see?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what is cool is they do
It's interesting. It's a different way
to think it through. Yeah. I mean, on the Mac, you could always do like Command Tab, and I think it's Control Tab on
Windows.
Yeah,
those features have always been there.
Yeah, to go through. There's also that you can do a four-finger swipe to go back from apps and just stuff back and forth with Lion, which I think might be interesting.
Right.
But it also ties into how the notion of having things open is also something that's changing. Basically, to finish up Mission Control, basically, you bring stuff up and it shows all your active, different virtual spaces if you're using Spaces. It shows all your active, applications or their windows thereof. You can kind of move everything around there. It's kind of like a one-stop shop to see that everything that's going on with your computer at that time, which is very nice.
I wonder how this stuff is going to work with multiple monitors.
They didn't talk about that.
I haven't heard anything about that recently. And I guess I can try it out when I download the developer preview of Lion.
Right.
I'm curious. Like,
you can't talk about it though, because you're under NDA.
And I won't talk about it.
No.
I don't have the developer preview of Lion.
Well, you can have it. Can't talk about it.
No, I don't have it. NDA. I don't have it.
If you read some person's blog, you can talk about somebody else's blog report about it though.
Well, Bill Johnson, he's going to tell me all about it.
That's not a real person.
Yes, it is. You don't know that.
I can see the look on your face. He's not a real person.
But anyway.
This also ties into the notion of what we have open is something that's also changing here, because they have this feature called Resume, basically. And for the first time, we've always used desktop computers as best something. I mean, even back in the day when you could only run one application at a time, you basically would start it up. It would start up, have a little, you know, little thing that says like, oh, you know, welcome to Word. I'm starting up and loading XYZ. And then it would start and you'd do your business. And then you would quit it and that app would go away and stop taking up resources.
Right.
They basically said like, well, we look at iOS and in that sense, stuff is always, you know, you only have one application going, but it saves states ever since iOS 4. So when you kind of like, you know, leave something and come back, it's as if it's always been running and you, you know, and you're always using it. And that's now coming, you know, across the board to Lion.
Yeah. And I wonder how well it's going to work, because even on the iOS devices, they have that feature.
Right.
Technically. But in my work and in day-to-day use with people that I work with, we have noticed that when you quit those save state apps, you get better performance on the phone.
Oh, sure. Because there's this. Yeah.
So I mean, it's like,
there's this stuff that's not, anyway,
you know, like the ideal world is that it shouldn't affect you at all.
Right. Well, I think what they're probably going to do in this is they'll probably just go and like page that stuff out to like to the hard drive, because you'll have the space available there.
Sure. Sure.
You know, where you kind of don't really on a portable device.
That's very true. That's very
true. Who knows what the implementation's like.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like what, you know, if you're going to have to be doing that same thing where you're wanting to quit things out.
Well, because I think
because you're noticing
because it actually is shutting them down, I think, on this one. They actually are just like, they actually just are like going away. They're actually not taking up any resources.
Oh, really? Like completely?
Yeah, correct.
And since there's the hard drive space to save it, they can do that.
But it's really cool. It is so granular. You can basically go and be up, you know, looking in a Word document. You could go and highlight a line of text to cut and paste it, quit out of the app or go to a different app and come back, and it will go and bring that back up with the exact text selection going. Like it's basically, it is true, you know, from the user perspective, invisible.
Yeah.
Complete resuming where you were, which is crazy. It's hard to get my head around it because it's fundamentally changing the way we use computers and have for 30 years.
Right. It is. Well, I mean, you have to really trust your computer.
Oh, sure.
You know, because like if you're not manually saving something.
Correct.
And like, you know, that's a hard mental block to get past, because Google Docs does that.
It's a hard habit to
break. Very similar in Google Docs. And I still find myself, and I don't do it as much, but wanting to hit save.
Oh, I always go up to the, and I'm in Google Docs, I always go up to the save button, and it's great because it's already saved it, but I'm like, okay.
Right.
And that brings us to like another feature they have. And this, I think, Resume and this next feature, or these pairs of features, I think are going to really, if they work as well as advertised, they're going to fundamentally transform the way we use computers. And I think not for like people like us necessarily, but for regular people, it kind of removes what's one of the scariest, you know, barriers to using a computer. And that's the notion of file saving, you know, and different versions thereof. How it works now, obviously, you do something, you better hit, you know, Control or Command S, depending on your platform, and save that off, because if something happens or goes wrong or you lose power, the program crashes.
And it's been that way for,
you'll lose work, you know, and everybody's lost work.
Forever, really. Oh,
you could accidentally hit like, you know, the quit command and then lose work. And
I don't know one person that hasn't lost work.
Yeah. And so what they're doing here is basically anytime you change a document, it is going and keeping a record of those changes and keeping them all in perpetuity.
And any change, we're talking like, you know, if you make 20 changes in a minute.
Yeah. Or if you cut, you know, one word out, and like it'll, and you can basically access all of those things, and basically, and you can bring up, you know, the different versions of your document. The feature is called autosave, and then versions is
I wonder if the versions, if it does exactly how Time Machine does it, you know, where it's like every minute, every hour, every, you know, like, because there's got to be some, because it says you can bring up a timeline. So it's got to be some, it can't be every second. You're not going to see, you know, 60 seconds of a minute of every version. You know what I mean?
Right. I think it's, you can go and you can browse all versions, and it actually pulls up. I'm sorry. We're just looking at some of the stuff online here. It actually does pull up the time frame. It is just like Time Machine, and it has like the little lines of demarcations where they've changed stuff.
Right. Yeah. That's it would make sense.
Yeah. And what's really cool about it too is like if you try to go and export it or send it, it always does the current one. So you can't accidentally go and, you know, send your boss the rough draft of the report that kind of is terrible with, you know.
Does it save it? Is it on your hard drive that it's
correct?
It's not like can you choose did it say? I mean, I didn't read enough to know. Did it say if you could change it to an external drive or anything? I guess these are things we don't really know yet.
Yeah, we don't. I don't think they specified.
It was just something that popped into my mind. I mean, obviously these days with the size of the hard drives that we have, running out of space is becoming less and less of an issue.
Yeah, but I think that's important because, I mean, if they are, what the logical thing I think for them to do is basically treat it like it is, like you think of files in your iTunes. You basically don't worry about where your songs are. You just worry about dealing with them through the interface of the application. And I wonder if it is going to be like that. This is system-wide, though. It's not application-based.
Really?
Oh, yeah. This is not. This is just a system-wide thing.
So even if it's a Word doc or if it's...
I mean, I imagine...
Because it looks like it... I mean, it seems like it's
built into their stuff. They're demoing it with, you know, Apple's, you know, with the iWork suite. I do believe it works. I don't have this in front of me, but I do believe it works system-wide with everything. I mean, maybe an application may have to go and, like, enable the functionality.
I'm very curious. I mean, we'll have to, you know, these are things that we'll see as we use it.
Right. And this is what happens when we have the day of reactions.
these are the questions that come.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. And then basically there's also new versions of Mail, which really has needed an upgrade, I think, on the Mac side, the desktop client. It's nice and it's workable now, but it's getting like a full screen upgrade and all that kind of stuff. But there's some nice search functionality that like is really overdue. There's like threaded conversations, stuff that they've had on iOS for a couple, you know, for a year.
I've never been a fan of the Apple Mail program.
Really?
In general.
I actually use it for everything.
Yeah, man. It's just all there's so many little quirky things that drive me batty.
Just stupid things.
Like, okay, first of all, the fact that you just can't open the program without having to configure an account kills me. It just drives me. It just quirky little things. Like, you can't open Apple Mail and just open it with no accounts in it.
Can I ask a practical consideration?
Why would you want to do that? You may want to configure it first and then add your thing in. And also, that's where they handle the default for your mail programs on your computer. So if you are using Outlook or Entourage or Thunderbird, the only way to change the default is to go into Apple Mail. So in order to actually get in there to change that preference, you actually have to configure a dummy account.
Okay.
That's what I run into that a lot.
I can see why that would be very frustrating for anybody
that doesn't use Apple Mail. You know, so that's one thing. The other thing is, and I'm hoping they fix this, if you have a Pop account, like a Pop Mail account, and you delete the account, you delete your messages.
Okay, that's lame.
Yeah, I just hope they just fix a couple of these quirks, that's all.
Yeah, well, there's that kind of like small niggly stuff. I guess I don't see that stuff because I kind of, you know, I set up and I don't, you know, I'm not adding.
Well, we're coming from a different point of view. You're more of the end user than me.
Yeah, I mean, I do have like 15 different accounts in there, which is ridiculous, but they're all deactivated. But yeah, I don't. I guess everything I'm running now, except for my Earthlink, which just kind of like pulls stuff. I've had it for like, you know, 20 years or whatever it is, or 10 years, and I just go and pull it back.
Yeah.
Pull everything off the server just as a backup. Everything else is all IMAP, other than that, like my Gmail and all my other, and my main account and stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, what were the, I mean, the layout of the new Mail is pretty looks much, so, it looks like the iPad.
Yeah, it basically looks exactly like the iPad. And there's lots of design, cues across, you know, iOS and, I mean, the new OS X line and in general that basically are iPad icons. You'll recognize like the add bookmark icon or just like, you know, the services, you know, icon, all that kind of stuff. It looks very, very familiar.
That's interesting. I mean, they did do a nice thing in the last version of Mail, where when you add the accounts, it was something about in adding the account section where it was the Gmail and the Mobile Me and everything that you weren't necessarily adding it in Mail. Like if you added it just in the Mobile Me section, it went across the board.
Oh, that's true. If you go in system preferences, if you go and like sign into MobileMe, it you know populates, you know, everything from iCal and that kind of stuff.
And it seems like they're going to be even more doing that more.
Well, especially with iCloud coming up,
right.
All that stuff gets put together. So it's really interesting across the board. It's you know, you see where they're going in terms of wanting to go and converge iOS and OS X. And I would not be surprised, quite honestly, if this is the last official OS X release that we see. And whatever comes out 2 years from now, 3 years from now, because there's a lot of stuff in here. It's going to take time for developers to adopt and get going full bore. And I could see in 2 or 3 years things are going to change, that maybe they go and have some sort of hybrid OS at that point.
Well, and also going to that, the price point of this.
Oh yeah, two things about this distribution wise.
Really interesting.
Well, OS X has always cost $129. I mean, except for like the original 10.0 beta, it was always $129.
Well, and the Snow Leopard.
Snow Leopard, right. And they basically said Snow Leopard. There's not a whole lot of cosmetic stuff. It's all under the hood stuff. We want users to get it, so we're going to charge you $29 for it. And people adopted it like crazy because that's cheap. And there's some
and
great functionality there.
And they played it as a kind of like an in between.
Yeah, and so they basically announced this one and. The words were, we want everybody to have it. So guess what? $29.99 again.
I mean,
and only that
I was very surprised.
It was me as well. And also they are distributing exclusively through the Mac App Store. You cannot go into an Apple store and buy a CD. You can't go to Amazon and order one.
Which also means if you're not 10.6 and above, you're out.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Because the App Store is only 10.6.
Yeah, it's only Snow Leopard. Interesting. I have to think they're going to go and allow some way to get some physical media, whether it's like getting that USB drive that ships with the MacBook Airs. There's got to be some way.
It also surprises me that, I mean, I would think that they would want people to upgrade from 10.5 to maybe not.
They have the numbers. I'm sure they probably look at it. And if so many people upgraded to Snow Leopard because of that earlier price, maybe people are already there.
It could be. It definitely could be.
I wouldn't
be that surprised.
Yeah. I think in the main requirements, I think you need an Intel Core 2 Duo. So you have to have a machine that basically was made in 2007 or later. So I'm sure most of those people, there has to be some physical media somewhere.
Right. But that price point's amazing. I mean,
it's fantastic. And a cool thing, part of me is like, I can't believe they're going to let it, you're used to having like physical media to back up to a boot off of disaster strike. One thing they're doing here that they announced it before, I didn't realize it. When you install Line, it installs basically a safe boot partition on your hard drive, basically a little piece of that you can boot from to reinstall stuff, run system utilities for.
See, that's what's so crazy. There. Like I don't know if you know this, but on 10.5 and 6, they actually started stealthily installing an Apple hardware test partition.
Really?
On all those machines. I didn't know about this till recently.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so if you if you have the disk that came with your computer, normally you can pop them in, reboot, hold the D key down, and it brings you the Apple hardware test, but you need from the DVD.
Well, that used to be a separate CD going back in the day, the Apple hardware test.
So
thing, yeah.
What they started doing on the last two generations of the iMacs, I didn't even realize it, is there's a hidden Apple hardware test partition.
Oh.
Had no idea.
Which makes a ton of sense and is really, really smart.
Yeah, so they're just building off of that, and now that it's like more of a repair permission partition, mm-hmm. I think that is brilliant.
Yeah, and apparently you can go and like boot into restore mode. If your main partitions crash, you can go online. You can go go to the browser. You can run Safari to check your email.
I mean,
check the support discussion groups to find solutions to your problems. It's really, really smart, and it's the one thing they've always done, but like they're really kicking it up is like taking away. What are all the big hurdles for users in terms of computers and how they can mess with it and making it as turnkey as possible?
And I also think like it's going to help. It helps them with support.
Yes.
When people call in.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and they kind of implemented that new support service in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, this somebody calls in with help, they're like, get, boot in this mode and then we can hop on your screen and we can help you get back into the
Oh, totally, because you're gonna have that partition so you can always do screen sharing.
Exactly.
It's so smart. And here's what I like about it. We talked last week about them maybe going and putting all applications to the App Store and locking it down that kind of way. Maybe they'll get there eventually. I think they will.
Yeah.
But right now it's like they're basically going and doing everything possible to go and make a desktop computer as seamless, as effortless, as scare-free as possible, as a mobiles and iOS devices, which is kind of remarkable. I mean, between like Restore, between versions.
Well,
the
they've really
saving.
Just started to borrow from their iOS devices, and you're not seeing it the other way. You're seeing it definitely that one direction from the iOS to the desktop.
And it's really cool. We're talking about Windows 8 and what they're doing and how they're kind of having that same they're both influencing the other.
Yeah, very similar.
And it's
stuff.
It's the first real change we've seen in computers since the windowed interface. I mean, since the GUI, it really is like the way we interact with it. Now it's fundamentally changing in a way. Like these are basic core concepts of computing: save, quit, all this stuff, and they're ceasing to exist.
Yeah,
it's rad.
It is. I mean, just if it gets to the point where you just stop thinking about saving.
Yeah.
Just that alone.
Like, can you imagine that, really?
I cannot wrap my head around
editing
it.
Editing the show
difficult.
On Sunday this week, I had a thing where I saved the wrong version and like, oh no, and I had to, and I screwed that up. I mean, I've been using computers my entire life and I still mess that stuff up.
Yeah.
But now it's like it's all taken care of. It's like, It's crazy.
It's going to be very exciting, and I really can't wait to play around with a lot more of these features, especially these versioning things.
Yeah, and ships next month in July.
Yeah, that was a surprise also.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, so very cool. I would be very, very inclined to sign up for the OS X developer program just so I can get my hands on it early. But I can wait a month and a half.
Did they say if it was going to be if the downloads, since they're going to be coming from the app? Well, I guess it has to be the full download if you're
it's a 4 gig
upgrade.
Download. That's the question I have. Some people are going to, depending on who has broadband where and how, like that's why I think they have to provide some physical media, because some people have a crappy DSL that has like 256 download. I mean, they're not going to be able to do it.
Put it this way, even if you have a 1.5 download, a 4 gig download is going to take forever.
A while.
Yeah. It's going to take forever.
I mean, overnight. You thought uploading your music to Google Music was bad. It's going to be like, basically just waiting, a day or more for your OS.
Right. I mean, and I guess it would be nice if it one day just showed up. Available, like if it downloaded and it was ready.
Yeah,
I mean, they might do that.
Probably not, because I mean, that's 4 gigs
that's a lot of space.
Like, I always am running it like with 2 gigs free on mine, or
right. And I'm also curious stuff. Like some of the other stuff that you download from the App Store now, some of it comes as DMG files.
No, all the App Store stuff comes directly and installs automatically.
All of them?
Yeah, everything.
Like even that iPhoto and all that stuff?
Everything.
I thought for some reason it came as a DMG.
No, everything goes. And that's like one of the big selling features. It all basically, it installs directly to your dock. I think it all installs directly to Launchpad now, which is the iOS-style launcher we talked about.
I really wonder how that's going to work for an OS, on an OS level. That's some high-tech crap.
I mean, I would think it has to go.
I don't know how they do that. It's cool.
Well, it has to be something, because they released the recent update. Here's what happens. The most recent update that they had for OS X, I think I want to say it's 10.6.6 just came out or 10.6.7. something. 10.6.7. That, one of the things that did is said prepared the computer for, Mac App Store upgrade for OS. So they obviously did something. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some partition to boot
here
already.
That might be, that's true, number one. Number two might be the first step of the OS installation is the partition, and then it reboots in that partition to install the OS.
Yeah.
I guess that would make sense too.
Well, you're exactly right, because it has to
boot from something.
But it could basically be downloading like an image, and like you're not seeing it as an image. You're right. That's just what it's doing, and it's just booting off of that. That's exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's pretty cool. I can't wait to try it.
Yeah,
I really can't.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. And that's just the first part of the announcements. I thought this was going to be a short show today. It is not going to be a short show.
Okay. Well, there's so much stuff.
There's a lot of stuff. And then the other big news, and this was something, Lion we all knew about. Lion people had talked about. They already had a preview. We knew it was coming. What nobody had heard anything about until some rumors broke, last night and, last Friday, was iOS 5. And I was on the Mac Rumors live blog, and at a certain point, they compared it to the scene in The Godfather, where Michael Corleone is having like his son being, christened. And in the background, outside the rest of the world, every single enemy of his is getting taken out one by one systematically. And that's what this was like with iOS. Every single outstanding feature, every complaint people had, every edge, other systems had against that, one by one down the list, check, taken out, shot in the eye, figure your glasses were getting a massage. Here's
iOS
5.
That's totally what they did. I mean, it was basically anybody that had their laundry list of complaints.
Yeah.
Apple just went, okay, well, we did this, we did that, we did your...
Yeah.
That was the perfect description.
They nailed it.
Funny.
I think it was Dan Moore or Jason Snell. They just nailed it.
I mean, it's brilliant. That's so true.
Yeah.
Well, let's go through some of the cool things.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, the biggest one I think that everybody, and I dealt with it, so it wasn't a problem for the most part, but it was a little bit embarrassing, was notifications. Because for years, basically, I mean, has been years at this point. You basically have a notification. Oh. It pops up in a little blue window, and you can see your notification, and that's fine. But the problem is, if you see it and happen to swipe your device unlocking already because it's in your pocket, you lose that notification and never see it again. You better hope that wasn't an important message. Otherwise, you have to hunt through all your apps to find what it was.
Right.
And there was no way to go back for stuff. There was no easy way to see stuff from your lock screen. So they took a cue from Android. They took a cue from some third-party developers that had done some jailbreaking solutions.
Yeah.
And they made Notification Center. And basically it's a little tiny bar that rolls around to the top. You can go and pull down from the top like Android to kind of see everything. There's a weather and a...
That was an interesting part of it, actually. The widgets inside the app drawer. That was kind of cool.
Yeah. And they're not... there's no third-party ones yet. You can't put stuff in there, but that's going to be coming.
I understand. I mean, that makes sense. And like you said, that's coming, of course.
The next year or year after, that's going to be coming.
But the big... they had sports scores in there in the demo they were showing.
Yeah,
the
ESPN Sports Center. Yeah.
I mean...
And that's great. I mean, basically, you tap anything, it will go. There's an X, so you can go and remove them from the screen. You can go and tap them to take it to that application.
And you can remove only certain ones if you want, right?
Yeah, that, there's an X in each.
Like, it just doesn't get rid of all of them.
Yeah, there's an X in each to each individual item. You can take it out. So,
and that's great.
And you can use it as, I mean, you know, a reminder system in that sense. Like, oh, I got to get back to that email, that kind of thing.
Right. Now, did it say, I didn't see, when you get a new alert, mm-hmm. does it show up on the top? Is that where it shows
there's
up?
There's a little bar that, in Game Center, how it works, you know, right now, if you get, like, if you're on Game Center and you win an, you know, unlock something, a little, like, little, you know, rectangular bar will, like, dump down and then they'll go back up.
Okay, so
it's
that's
like that.
Does.
We're kind of like it looks like it's a rotating, you know, like, you know, menu bar that kind of comes down below the main menu bar, uh-huh. and then rolls back into the application. It's kind of, it's a really neat animation.
So it goes now. Is there any icon that shows you have notifications? Like you have 6 notifications waiting for you, or no?
You know, I don't.
Curious.
I don't know.
Because, like, you know, can you in a one quick look know that you have something to pull down? That's what I wonder.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't
like something
know.
In the, you know, like when you have an email or,
right.
you know, you see it on the icon or, you right. know, whatever.
I haven't seen anything where it shows anything because the menu bar still looks clean. What I think it is like if you're using, I'm guessing
it would make sense
is.
To be in that top.
But I think, but they don't also like the clutter there because there's already like a lot of icons there. I think
or just a little button.
But I think what the idea is probably is if you're using the device, you see that window come up, and so you know there's something there. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, like if
or just like a dot or something.
I know they have something.
Something to let you know that there's something to look and to pull down.
Yeah, because if you dismiss 4 or 5, and then later you want to, do I have any messages? There's got to be something. I don't think they've talked about it, but
yeah, I'm sure there's something. And also, basically, yeah, you can look at stuff from the lock screen. Everything you basically expect and kind of want. And like I said, I really wish they'd implement this because it's been a long time.
It's so nice that it just doesn't have that pop-up anymore because have you ever been with somebody and then all of a sudden like they see your pop-up that you don't want them to see, the like text message pop-up or whatever it is?
Oh, I turn that off so it doesn't show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I have had that happen.
I've seen that happen to people. It's embarrassing.
Yeah. So I basically have, you can turn off whether what it says anything or not. Like I've, yeah, I don't.
Okay.
So I go, oh, I have a text. So it doesn't say what the text
it
is.
It doesn't have the actual
info. Yeah. Because that can just be compromising. Depending. If you lead a dirty life, Scott Gold.
Who, me? I don't know what you're talking about.
A couple things that people didn't know about. There's something called Newsstand, which basically was it's like iBooks but for magazine subscription. They announced a slew of magazine subscriptions, which haven't really been fully implemented yet. And I believe it's not, so you don't, from what I understand, I haven't played with it, but it looks like each of those subscriptions opens up as their own app. So you don't necessarily have to have like 10 apps or magazines on your homepage. You can basically look and launch from there.
And did I see something about auto updating of those subscriptions?
They download in the background.
Okay.
Jim also happens nice. For podcasts such as Tech Bacon.
Yes.
Available on iTunes. another thing, and this is like, I don't even know if this needed to be there, but to-do list, reminders. There are lots of third-party applications that
people
really
use that.
Yeah, I mean, Remember the Milk is a great one for a simple one for iOS. Things is like a more robust one that's really pretty that has taken 10 years to go and have any cloud syncing, so people have jumped, including me. OmniFocus, they basically is – that's the big hardcore, like, you know, pro-level one. But basically, if you don't need that certain level of features, you can just use the built-in one. And what's really cool about it is the reminders, they now tie into Mobile Me Now iCloud calendar, and it pops up in the web client, which just started today randomly during the keynote. I started getting updates or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You just all of a sudden started
and it was really cool. It brought that tab of the browser to the foreground, and I'm like, oh, I didn't know it did this. And it was like about 11 o'clock. I'm like, oh, I guess this is live. And also, it has location-based awareness. You can basically set reminders for certain locations. So when I get to the house,
pretty awesome.
Awesome, yeah. Okay, the house, I'm gonna do this. Or I get to work, do this. If next time I go to the grocery store, get this thing. The next time I go to the grocery store, the reminder will pop up.
Yeah,
go get the bacon.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah.
And it's just, it looks like it's really simple and basic, but sometimes that's all you really need, especially for that location stuff.
Or like, remember when you're, you know, just like in this area of town that you wanted to stop at this store. I mean, how many times I wanted to hit this restaurant
you're downtown and you set a reminder for yourself to go to like, was it the Nickel Diner or the,
to get
a maple bacon donut, you know, and you forget because you're driving downtown. And you're like, oh, that's right. I want to get the maple bacon donut. I better stop and have that.
Yes.
By the way, I had one of those.
You did?
I did.
And?
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this in another show.
Well, see, we had to get a little food in.
Yeah,
there
was also a maple. There's also a caramel apple bacon turnover.
Whoa!
We'll talk about it on this Saturday show. Well, I'll talk about it on this Saturday show.
I don't understand what you're saying right now.
We'll talk about it on Saturday. You'll be happy. That's the tease for this next week's Tech Bacon. Another thing that had been discussed.
Yeah, I'm not hungry.
Twitter integration. You know, this kind of broke we talked about in the last show. System level to Twitter integration, just like, you know, Scott had thought, is there's basically like, you know, in your system preferences, you sign in once for Twitter. I think the third party apps are going to be able to do that. So it, so you can use Tweetbot, something else if you want. Right. It does go and install the Twitter, the official Twitter app directly from the system panel for you, though. Like, you don't have to go to the App Store and download it. It's built in there already.
I wonder why. I'm curious why Apple went so hardcore Twitter integration. I'm curious. Like, I just wonder, because it's big, but it's not the mom and pop user. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which would be Facebook. And they've,
which is, you know, interesting. I mean, are they going to buy? Are they buying Twitter? What's going on?
I don't think they're buying Twitter. I think, you know what it is? I think it's one of these things where it helps them get a, they've been, had, let's face it, Apple's had a really hard time with social.
With social. Yeah. Yeah.
Just like Google, they just, it's not so necessarily like, you know, in their
DNA. Someone else is doing it better, we'll just integrate them.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And do it in a way that basically can also encourage their users to do it easier. So that will help Twitter.
Yeah.
Because Twitter's growth is flatlined. It's kind of a win-win for both sides.
That's very true.
And there was this picture service that we didn't get a chance to talk about it last week that just debuted literally 3 or 4 days ago, where Twitter basically was having their own image hosting service. They partnered with Photobucket. You can use that with iOS now, and it uses that exact service. That's why they launched it this last weekend, so it would be ready for the betas. And basically, any kind of application you're in, if you want to share a bookmark in Safari, or if you want to go and share a photo from your photo application, or any kind of stuff, it's already built in there, email, you know, or tweet. And all that stuff's ready to go with a really, really nice, easy to use, you know, interface. And I think they're probably hoping it can, you know, they can bring it to the mom and pop user, which is,
yeah, I mean,
it'd be interesting if it can happen.
Yeah, I'm curious. I mean, it may give Twitter the spark that it kind of needs right now.
Yeah. So very, very cool. Enhanced camera application. There's an application called Camera Plus. It has lots of great, you know, elements to it. They kind of co-opted a lot of those things. Finally, there was a big brouhaha last year where Camera Plus had hidden the feature to go and use the hardware up and down volume buttons as a shutter. Apple made them take it out because you weren't allowed to do that.
Oh, interesting.
Now the camera app, you can do that with the volume up button. Yeah. And there's a new Photos application that brings in a lot of iPhoto functionality directly to the Photos
photo
app
editing.
On your iPhone. So, you know, take out the red eye, one touch color correction, you know, cropping, all this stuff is all there.
Pretty
in the
much
Photos
similar
app.
What they did with iMovie. But on the photo.
Yeah. And I got to say, as neat as iMovie is on the phone, it's kind of useless. Right. I mean, it's a cool demo, but you can't really use it unless we're really kind of gimmicky
stuff. But photo stuff, you would use it often.
Absolutely, because you can get this. And also, it uploads the photos automatically to iCloud, which we'll get to in a little bit. New version of Safari has tab browsing on the iPad, a lot of stuff there. I'm hoping they go and speed it up, the JavaScript. Actually, they upgraded the Nitro JavaScript engine recently, but I'm hoping there can always be speed gains there. I'm hoping they do something.
That mobile browser is just brilliant.
Yeah.
It always has been.
Yeah.
I mean,
and every iteration becomes better and better. Yeah. It's great. Here's the really, really cool things that have come up to. Nobody was expecting this. iMessage.
Yeah. Crazy.
Now, we've talked before about how BlackBerry Messenger is huge for BlackBerry users, and it's been like the one thing that, you know, RIM, our favorite company, has been hoping would kind of go and, like, you know, been pinning their hopes on to keep them alive. They've been talking about, you know, introducing BlackBerry
iOS
Messenger
app and,
for
Android,
but both of those are supposed to be 6 and like and a year out, respectively, I think. So it's a while. So
shocking.
So what Apple's done is they basically said, okay, cool, we think SMS, and they basically said this in the keynote, they said SMS sucks.
Yeah.
So we want to go and like get rid
built
of it.
Built-in messaging app.
So basically it's built in. It's part of the built-in messaging app. It's iOS to iOS free. You know, it uses the data connection. You don't have to pay for it. No SMS being used. You can get, you know, read receipts. You can go and get sent receipts. You can see when your friend is typing. And it also bridges to the SMS application. So basically if you don't, from what I understand, it automatically will go and send iMessages to your iOS users.
Right.
And then it'll send SMS to your friends.
Did it say if it would have any integration with iChat?
They haven't said yet.
Because that would be
they haven't said
kind
yet.
Of brilliant.
Well, here's another thing interesting we didn't talk about online. iChat now supports plugins, so you can bring in different stuff.
Right.
So someone could, I'm sure, if the API is made available, is exposed, someone can easily go and write a plugin to incorporate that, and that has to be where they're going, because eventually they want to have iMessages and everything and FaceTime and everything.
Yeah, it makes sense.
You know, and eventually, and this shows the true nature of what Apple's thinking. One by one, piece by piece, they want to take away all the established carrier services. Because in 3 or 4 years with LTE's omnipresent, we are not going to be using cell phone service so much. We're going to be using data for VoIP. We're going to be using data for almost everything.
It's going to be different.
That is the goal, ultimately, for all this stuff.
Yeah. You know, the one up BlackBerry still has. God, I just don't like that company. Pains me to say, I mean, with their BBM, is that it actually doesn't use data or text rates.
How does it work?
It has its own proprietary.
Oh, because they're running their own server thing, and
it goes through Bez, through the Bez network.
Right.
So it, like, you could use it without any charging incurred across the world.
But wouldn't you need a data connection to use the BlackBerry service?
Well, you still need to be connected to a cell network, but it doesn't go against any of your anything.
Right.
Doesn't go against data charges, doesn't go against texting, nothing.
Gotcha.
That's the one thing that they have. I'm not sure if that's good. It is good because if you're roaming overseas or something and you want to, because I know a lot of people that do this,
right,
and you want to BBM and you don't want to get incurred any roaming charges or texting charges, you can BBM.
Makes sense.
It's the one thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Apple.
Only flip side being, if you have an iPhone, you have a data connection. So not non-stop. So in a sense, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that is a specific use scenario. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely. No, definitely. So it's really interesting. There was no mention of making it like, you know, an open standard like they said with FaceTime and haven't done yet. But it's really, really interesting.
And they said it's group text, group messaging
there is group, too. I believe there is group in there as well. The carriers, apparently John Gruber, you know, Apple wizard, knows everything. Apparently the carriers did not know about this until today. They saw it along with the rest of us.
They cannot be happy.
In a certain sense, they're introducing tiered data. So you kind of figure, okay, cool, they're going to be
They're going to be using more data.
They can deal. Yeah. But, you know, this is a huge revenue stream for them. Frankly, they are raping users daily. I mean, it's insane. Yeah. Like I can
the
go.
Texting charges are ridiculous.
But what's great now is like this comes out, quite honestly, all my family have iPhones.
Yeah.
You know, people, I mean, you and I use GroupMe nonstop. Like, I don't really text anybody that doesn't have an iPhone anymore. So I can go down to the cheapest possible plan now. I think I have the second or third highest tier now. There's like, you know, I don't have unlimited, but go down to the cheapest possible one, save myself $10 a month. Like that, done.
Yeah. It's something, it's funny because I haven't even thought about it much in recent years because I've had unlimited texting. So it's never really been on my mind, but that's not the majority of people.
Yeah. Well, so it's like, I think it's unlimited on AT&T is like $20. It's like,
expensive.
It's ridiculous. Considering like you're paying $30 for unlimited data, I got to spend like 10 or 15 for a text for like what? Like, you know, 5K of data.
It's ridiculous.
Seriously.
Totally ridiculous. So that's cool.
So very cool and unexpected. And I mean, who knows where it's going to go.
There hadn't been anything about that anywhere.
So, and like, I really think between FaceTime and this, you know, Apple's one by one taking over the power, making their devices the conduits. And at this point, it's great. They're so entrenched, especially with Verizon in the US. No one can really say anything. They can't make that much noise about it, you know?
Yeah. And so there were two other really big things iOS side.
Yeah. Well, the big one, another big, you know, complaint over the years is then like, you know, for a post PC device, which is what iPads and iPhones supposedly are, you always would have to go and
register it through a computer.
Yeah. You'd always have to you get your brand new device to say connect to iTunes and you would always need a computer to do that. That is gone.
Right.
I mean, Android's been doing it, you know, for years, but
now you can do it all over the air, right out of the box.
Yeah. And basically, you'd basically start, you know, get your device. It says, instead of saying, you know, slide to unlock, it says slide to register or something. And then you sign in and there you go from there. If you have, you can then obviously restore a previous image from an iTunes backup. Or you can restore from an iCloud backup.
Right. Which is great.
Yeah. Which is where we're going to come to here in a second. And like that's, it's, once again, a big feature, big thing that Android always had. Once again, knock it off the checkbox and like, you know.
And then also the Wi-Fi syncing.
The Wi-Fi syncing, yeah. Which you'll be complaining about forever. Like basically every time you dock your phone, charge it, assuming it's on the same network as like your iTunes, whatever, it'll go and like sync with your iTunes and all the stuff that you have.
Can you manually do it, did it say? I'm sure you can.
Trigger it? I think there is a sync now.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, there is actually. I read somewhere there is a sync now button in there.
But that's great.
Which is fantastic.
Right. And that leads into
iCloud.
Really, the iCloud stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, this is something we've all been talking about it, you know, nonstop. There's a lot of conjecture about what it was going to be and what the mentality, the approach was going to be. The biggest focus going into this was just the Music Locker because that's the only real, like, you know, comprehensive cloud service that's been labeled as such that's been emerging lately. Obviously, Google has Google Docs and they have their whole suite of services. But in terms of new things approaching, this is how it's, you know, it was always from this music side. iCloud is much, much more than just music.
Oh yeah, it's the whole online ecosystem for Apple now.
Yeah, I mean, and it's and what's really interesting about it demonstrated a fundamental difference, I think, between their approach and Google's approach of how they use the cloud. As both companies, it's like it's obviously where they both see the future is.
Oh yeah,
but they have very different takes on how to use it. Google thinks, you know, obviously that the browser, you know, even though the Android are dedicated devices and have native applications,
yeah, but they still
they think, you know, the web browser is basically where it's all going to go, and you're going to have all your data in the cloud, but all your applications will be in the cloud as well.
Right, and those, all web-based apps, all no desktop anymore. Yeah, all just their whole Chrome philosophy.
Exactly.
You know,
and that's where they're obviously obviously going, but Apple is basically, it's very clear they are all about native applications. They're all about, you know, quality of, you know, native, you know, hardware experience with like devices, with applications.
I really like this.
But the engine of it all, you know, is the cloud. So basically all of your devices basically become, you know, ways to access your life that is up in the air somewhere.
And they're syncing up and down. So it's like all of your, everything is available on your device. It's not, it's the cloud is the hub.
Correct. Yeah, well, I think the thing that Steve Jobs said, his quote today, he said, the cloud is the truth. Because currently you have it where, like, you'd have your Mac, and your Mac would be like the center of everything. And your Mac would sync up to MobileMe or whatever, then your phone would pull down from that, and they'd talk back and forth. But your Mac was always the hub. Now the Mac is just another device.
Another receptacle.
Yeah, like your iPad or like your iPhone or whatever. And like what's ever in the cloud, that's the true thing.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of different features involved here. It's a really comprehensive solution. It's kind of nuts, to be honest.
I want to go. I just want to live in the cloud. Can I live in the cloud? Why not? It sounds fun up there. No? comfy bed where I have my music and my documents and yeah,
and your documents. Basically, start
and
with
I shoot
the core
stuff down at people. It's fantastic.
Okay, Cupid. Whatever. Jeremy Piven. Now, great. You remember the TV show?
I do.
It was a terrible TV show. Basically, they start off with MobileMe. MobileMe is the service Apple has had now. It basically is like, you know, it's contact syncing. It is calendars. It is, you know, it's bookmark syncing, and it is mail.
Right. So no more MobileMe.
Yeah, that's basically gone. You know, gone. And then Steve Jobs just like talks smack about it. Right. I mean, he like he
it never worked right. Blah blah blah.
Do you hear this? He's like, oh,
no, I didn't.
He's like, he basically said like, I know what you guys are thinking. This is from the guys that made MobileMe. Why would you trust us? Fair enough. MobileMe has been good the last 6 months. I mean, the last 6 months of the year, it's kind of gotten into shape where it actually works.
Well, they revised the calendar. And they did,
you know, well, it actually has been really, really robust recently. But so that basically, that's all folded into it's all folded into iCloud now. It's part of iCloud. Additionally, basically, they have all of your apps, all your books, all your documents, and backup also exists in the cloud.
Now, when they said apps, is it third-party apps too? Is it everything, or is it only Apple apps?
It's iTunes Store, everything. And this stuff is all now live. The App Store in the cloud is already live on 4.3 devices. So I can basically pull up my phone right now and look at my App Store.
Now, what about – did they say anything – because I didn't hear all the stuff and I read as much as I could. But did they say anything about the desktop applications and iCloud?
Not yet.
I'm curious.
No, I definitely am. Well, they didn't. I take that back. I was just thinking in terms of iOS.
But did they specify? Maybe it means everything.
They do. Okay, here they are saying it's for iOS stuff only.
Okay,
but that's just a matter of time.
That's what I think.
Obviously, and maybe probably the one where they're thinking about is that you're not going to be downloading, you know. You have multiple mobile devices. You only have one desktop device.
True. Very true.
You know? But basically what it is like in terms of, you know, App Store in the cloud, I can go down to the App Store, you know, on my portable device, or I can go to, you know, iTunes 10.3 on the Mac.
Yeah.
And basically there's a purchase item now, and it shows all the things that I've purchased on the App Store now, and I can scroll through them and download them to that device, and they don't have to be there. They can just pull them right directly down.
Well, I'm looking at this right now. They've already implemented this cloud icon and wow, that's very cool.
And the same thing works for music basically. So all my music that I basically, maybe, I, you know, I've bought music. The music obviously only works right now for stuff you've bought on iTunes.
Through iTunes, yeah.
But basically, it's the same thing where it's like I'm at my app and I'm like, oh man, I bought that great Morrissey record. It's on my computer at home. I didn't sync it. Boom, I can go right there and it's just ready to go. Don't have to rebuy it. And it's the first time apparently. And I wasn't thinking about it, but it's true that you can go and like download music separately to different devices multiple times without getting additional charges.
Yeah. Well, on Apple's side. Amazon, you can do that.
But that's not doing to a different device. I think that's the fine line they're drawing. Different computers.
But you can download it to different phones.
Oh, you're right. You're right with that App Store. Yeah. You're right. Anyway, that music, we'll get more of the music. That's kind of like the banana. It's like a cherry on the top of the banana.
But the other thing, the things that were interesting was the apps and
also books are the same.
Everything.
And basically in documents. And this is what's really interesting. Every document you do, every edit, all this kind of stuff, it all goes up to the cloud and is available everywhere. So, you know, if you go and make a change, you know, on Pages, you know, on one device, then you'll go up into Pages on the other device and that work will already be there. You don't have to go and sync it. You don't have to go and change it. Everything's just already there, happening in the background, ready to go.
Now, is this only for Pages and Keynote and all that stuff?
That is written as if the copy and the thing is written as if it's for everything. I think they did a demo. I don't remember what the demo
although
had
I guess
the desktop
how would you,
or not.
How would you open, you wouldn't open a Word doc on your, well, I guess you would in Pages. As long as it's the document, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. I believe all that stuff, all does work. I believe that is going to work.
Do you think it takes
I don't watch the QA, so I don't remember if the demo was with desktop or not.
I wonder if it takes it from your documents folder, or I'm curious, you know, like how does it know what docs? I don't think they went that specific. So, right. I would imagine these are just questions.
Sure. I'm sure it's
curious.
Probably only, you know, applications that are enabled for it. I'm sure, like, you know, in iOS, it's, there's no real file system in iOS per se. But I think the file system ends up being the cloud in this case. Yeah. And I think that's where that stuff goes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And also along with that, you know, backup all your user data, all like, you know, your app data, all that stuff is always getting backed up in the cloud. I think it's once a day it gets backed up, you know, regularly.
Right. And this is free.
And all this, that's the big thing. MobileMe costs
free.
$99 a year. All this, all these services for free. All you need to do is have a device running iOS 5 or Lion, and you get access to the cloud.
That's nice.
I mean, I'm really surprised. I expect them to have like the basic suite of services, like the MobileMe Trio for free, then maybe other stuff, you know, to cost money. But they're really committing. You know, they know this is what it is. They want people invested in this. This is exactly where they think they need to go. And it's not merely, because part of me always wondered, is this just going to be a defensive move against Google's services? Because their services are great. This is clearly not that. This is a vision that we talked about. You know, from 1996, he's been articulating this for a certain way. And like, this is how they see the next 10 years.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
No, it's very, I'm really curious to see how it works. With third party,
well, that's the thing. All this stuff is like there's APIs for all of these, for
right?
Developers.
Exactly. That was
one
of the big things they announced.
Exciting. I mean, I was reading on Twitter earlier. One of the developers from Tapbots is basically saying like, okay, cool. Now, what iCloud stuff can I put in? Like, you know, for you know, they have a bunch of different apps, including Tweetbot. He's like, they're already trying to go and figure out what stuff they can put in there. And it's really really cool. One interesting side bit though, for years it's always ever since 2007, the iPhone has always had iPod as your music app for everything.
Right, right.
That's gone. They've basically gone and deprecated the iPod as a brand now you just have an app that just says music,
right?
Which also tells me eventually we will get to streaming music, which is a question mark, you know. Otherwise you wouldn't change the name to from iPod.
And then it makes sense because they'll probably retain the iPod brand as a device.
Correct.
You know.
Yeah. And also in terms of iCloud stuff, photos, it stores your 1,000 most recent photos.
And there's this photo stream.
And that's what they're called, photo stream. And a photo stream is tied into, and that's what that is in the cloud. And that ties into your Apple TV, that ties into your Mac, that ties into everything, can see those photos. Because what I do when I take photos, I basically keep the last, you know, 3 to 6 months on my phone, because that's what you want to see most often.
Yeah.
Already done in the cloud.
I wish Android had something like that. They have you can sync Picasa, but it doesn't have an auto every picture you take up to Picasa. That would be a killer feature. And I mean, that is a killer feature for iPhoto.
It's really, really cool because like you think about taking a picture and like, you know, then it's, you always have to worry about processing.
You have to think about it. Like you take a picture and then you get home and open your iPhoto.
Yeah. And it's there.
That's great.
It's fantastic.
You know, like that's, I love that conceptually. I really do.
It's the notion that like, you know, it's this thing, these aren't silos anymore. It's like, you know, they're all just ways, there's windows into your stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a lot of cool stuff.
And they said, I'm pretty sure I read this, was that, you know, for the mail account, you get 5 gigs of free storage. The other storage for more photos or anything else, they really didn't get into.
Correct. And I imagine like what they always say with MobileMe is they basically gave you a certain amount. I think it was 5 gigs as well. And you could buy additional storage.
Right.
I imagine they'll do the same thing. There was no mention of iDisk or anything like that. So I don't know if that's going to go away or what.
I think it'll probably still be there just as paid storage kind of thing for bigger stuff.
It would make sense to send some sort of like external cloud disk. I hope they improve it because iDisk is not so.
No. You know, it's like, although I was surprised that they did say 5 gigs for mail, because I mean, come on, every other service is unlimited now. Yahoo, Gmail, everything. It's like, it doesn't seem, well. And they have these huge new data centers. I don't know. It felt a little confusing that they even said that. It was weird. You know?
Yeah, I'm just checking up the stats. They've given any more information on the 5 gigs.
Oh, gotcha. But the thing I did read say it was only mail 5 gigs. Like it didn't count towards your photo stream, didn't count towards that, and your music didn't count towards that, and the documents didn't count towards that 5 gigs.
Oh, okay. So it's just mail?
Yeah, that's what they said. So it was strange. I'm not...
I guess they. I mean, that was always the MobileMe thing. I guess that's why they just did it for that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it didn't count against the photos. That's great. The photos they do. It's like the last 1,000 photos.
It's like you said, 1,000
photos,
right?
And I think then there's like a 30-day window or something where like something will be up there.
Yeah.
But very cool stuff. And lastly, the feature we're talking about is music. Now, there are a couple things that they have yes. going on with music. First of all, they have like this iTunes in the cloud is what we were talking about, you know, like the App Store, basically. All right. your purchases are there so you can download them, you know, on your device later or whatever. But the big question was the Music Locker thing.
Before we get to that, they also have the feature, speaking of the stuff that you bought, where buy one place, download everywhere.
Oh, correct. Thing. Yeah. I already have that enabled on my device. That's already implemented.
That's great. So like you're on your iTunes at home, you buy a song, and if auto download is enabled on any of your other accounts, whether it be another computer, phone, iPad or whatever, it'll just automatically download.
Yeah.
Great feature.
And it's cool. You can turn it on. You can turn it on for different media types like books or, you know,
oh, you audio, can.
Or yeah, it's all, it's broken out.
Oh, that's
and
great.
It's also, you can select, well, so then if you it's can podcast, select cellular, then... you can select cellular or not. If you don't want to go and like, you know, run up your data cap on a cellular.
Oh, so then, only Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Or
they
only,
allow you to turn off the cellular. Which is makes sense and is awesome.
Yeah, no, that's great.
But the terms of like the cloud, you know, the Music Locker cloud, you know, we have the Amazon service where it's, you know, it's built in. You get for the 1 year, they're giving you 5 gigs free. And then how does it work? 5 gigs free, then like the 20 on top of it.
Is that Amazon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was 5 gigs. And then if you bought one album, it was up to 20 for the first year. And right. then Google was 20,000 songs.
Yeah. But they haven't announced prices yet.
Right.
Right. So what was Apple's solution going to be? It came as the one more thing that I was on.
One little more thing. He said, didn't he say what?
Yeah.
But finally, at the end of the day, I for the last 10 minutes of the keynote, I actually ended up in front of a computer.
Well, it was funny. I've been IMing. I've been in group messaging.
I had my
Scott.
Own personal blogger. Brian was my own personal blogger. But like, it was fantastic.
He finally got to the computer and they'd announced everything. And I'm like, oh, this is terrible. There's no Music Locker service. How disappointing, because word had spread last week that it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And I'm like, this is lame. And then he said one more thing, and I was like, oh, shiat. Like,
this
here
is
it comes.
The one more thing.
And then he realized, like, okay, so there's somebody that leaked that news about there not being a Music Locker, and that person's name was, you know, Steve Jobs. Yeah. So you're like, oh, okay, cool. Now what they're doing, it's somewhat as expected, and some things that are different. Basically, we'll go and do like the scan and match. It will scan your iTunes library, and everything that's in there that they have 18 million songs.
Whether
in the
you
iTunes
bought
library.
It, whether you bought it from them or not,
yeah. I mean, quite
matter.
Frankly, whether you ripped it from a CD or you got it off of LimeWire, it does not matter. They will allow you to go. They will mirror that up in the cloud for you as a 256 kilobit AAC file,
right.
which sound fantastic,
oh, yeah.
which is higher than you can actually buy right now, because iTunes Plus is 192.
Oh, really? You can't buy 256?
I don't believe so. I think 192 is the highest they offer right now. So basically, higher fidelity than they've ever offered before. If it's something, if they do not have something, then you can then upload it. As
then
part
it will
of service.
Upload, right?
And so all your stuff can be there.
Now, what we don't know,
is if there's a streaming component. We don't know if it's. You'll definitely be able to go and like download that music anywhere. So if all your music's in the cloud and you want something, you can download it to your device. Can you stream? Unclear. The wording has been suspiciously vague.
Right.
You know,
they haven't said,
because like in everything else they talk about, you know, download it, but this, they only refer to it as listen.
Yeah.
The fact that they have it a music app and not an iPod app, an iPod thing is something that holds music, where the music seems like something that just like creates, you know, just draws music. Yeah. Makes me feel like it will stream eventually. I don't know if it will happen at launch.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like I would just be very shocked if there wasn't.
Because there's some logistical questions too. If you have stuff on your computer and you have the better version up in the cloud, wouldn't you want to stream that version instead of download two versions to your computer and
right.
stuff
and,
like that?
And then if there is no streaming component, it takes away the thought that we've talked about devices with smaller drives and all
yeah.
that stuff. Like, and that seems to be a wave that's kind of coming.
Correct.
And it would be strange to me that they didn't embrace it, but it may just be something that's not there at launch and it comes
yeah.
later.
Well, there's like a logistical issue they're working out, or a contract issue, or
and the price,
know, whatever.
The price on this was $24.95.
I think it's maybe $25 flat per year. Which basically, I mean, they put it up. Obviously, they're trying to push their service. They put it up against Amazon for that same. You know, they basically are using 20,000 songs, like Google is, as their barometer for max storage.
Right.
That would cost you $200 on Amazon.
And I guess the
Google,
only thing that happens is if you cancel the service, you just don't have access to the cloud portion of it.
Yeah, to the high quality mirrored versions.
If you brought it back down on any other devices, I guess they live on those devices now anyway.
Yeah.
So,
well, and either way, you own it, so it you,
right.
know, you already
yeah,
have you have your own hard copy,
yeah.
so you don't lose anything. Unlike
right.
with the subscription
yeah.
service, we might lose stuff.
Yeah.
And here's something that somebody wrote something really, really cool that I hadn't thought about. You know what this is going to be great for? I'm always trying to re-rip my music at higher bit rates, right?
Yeah.
Because you're always trying to go, because like, you know, what do I want to have it as great as possible. Like, and I've ripped all this stuff at like 128 AAC, and I'm going to need to re-rip it at some point, which is going to be such a pain.
I know.
Rip all your stuff lossless. Use the cloud to stream 256 or to download 256 AAC
devices.
Files to all your devices.
That's a fascinating idea.
Never have to rip again. Never have to rip again.
That's a very interesting idea, Brian.
It wasn't. Really it was not mine. That. I forget who. I want to say it was like Christina Warren or somebody on Twitter. But
I don't really want to go through that process again.
I would.
That
go
was like a month of my life.
I would go through it again if it was the last time I ever had to do it.
How long did it take you to rip all your cold collection?
Honestly, I did it in 2007 when I got my iPhone. Because at that point, I needed everything.
Yeah, I did a little before that.
And then, I mean, I had some in there, but it was like pieces.
Yeah.
And then I did the whole rip, and I did all the artwork and everything. It was, I mean, to be honest, especially at that time.
It was like
time,
my life for a month, I swear to God.
Yeah, same thing here. Because especially the artwork was really, really hard. Because at that time, there wasn't a whole lot of resources online. You couldn't get, I don't feel like you couldn't get the artwork from different places.
Yeah, there was a lot that was
a lot
missing.
Of manual Googling happening. So there's a lot of that going on. But if I only had to rip one more time and I could sell all my CDs...
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, because that's why I've never sold a CD for that exact reason.
Same thing. Same with a big freaking box, a huge moving box of all my CDs. Sitting
I helped
in
you
the
move
closet.
It. I remember.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you helped me carry that.
I helped you pack and move it. I remember.
Right, that thing was heavy. But you're right. I mean, rip them all is lossless. That total. That's a great concept. And then you have the 256 that you can bring down. That's now. I wonder if you can bring it down in a lesser. If you wanted to,
I don't know. You could
like
always.
If you only wanted 128,
you could always cross convert when you got it down.
Well, that's what
iTunes.
I'm wondering if it'll be that way from the cloud,
right? And that's the one thing
which
that,
would be cool.
That's one thing that makes me wonder about the streaming component is I don't feel like they would stream a 256K file,
right?
Or 256 kilobit file, anyway.
Right. Yeah.
That
did they say when the stuff's going to be available?
All the iTunes and App Store stuff and the cloud stuff is live now. You can get 10.3 iTunes to do the iTunes side of that.
Oh, so
live
you can
now.
Sign up for the $25 service now?
That's not available now. That's the music locker thing. That's
right.
Different.
Sync Everywhere thing is already live.
That's going to be this fall along with everything else. Obviously, this stuff is all going to come in September when they announce the new
iPhone.
Well,
that's what I figured, but I just didn't know if they actually set a date for it.
But it is the clouds, all the iCloud stuff. Or some of the iCloud stuff is available for developers now. I don't know if that means the music service or not.
Interesting.
But so because obviously they need to start building stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, just one other to backtrack a few things because we forgot to talk about it. And I just saw a picture which made me think about it. On the iPad, they have the split keyboard now for the
thumbs. Yes.
Which I just thought was really smart.
Yeah.
I thought that was smart.
Because right now the keyboard, spans the entire width or basically landscape or portrait is the width of the screen.
Right.
You can now pull it up and split it to either side so you can type with your thumbs.
Type with your thumbs as you hold it.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Which for portrait, honestly, is going to be great. Because it's hard. I'm typing landscape is great.
I think it's really
portrait
smart.
Is really hard. But it's great. That's another small feature that some people put out.
Yeah.
And I never thought they would have released that, to be honest. It seems very...
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, it has utility, but it seems like against what they've decided they're going to do, so it'll never change.
Back when, it was a couple of years ago, remember the ultra mobile PC thing that Windows was and Intel were coming out with? You remember that? It was like the ultra mobile PC.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, whatever that, failed. But one of their features on there was a keyboard like that on the screen. And I always, even back then, I thought that was such a great feature.
Yeah.
So I'm cool. I'm glad to see that implemented in something else better.
Definitely. They still don't have a tab key on the keyboard from what I could see,
really?
Which is annoying to me.
Never had one?
They've never had one. And honestly, the only reason I would want it is for like screenwriting software.
Right.
But there's ways around that.
Is there a key combination to do that or
no? But there's a Celts is a great screenwriting app that's out for iPad. And there's a way around it. I forget what it is. There's some sort of, functionality where you can jump from element to element. That's obviously a very, very specific problem. But also indents, that kind of stuff, one of the things that's now in mail for iOS. So I don't know how that's going to be handled. But there's a bunch of small refinements as well. I mean, obviously, we just picked the big ticket items that they kind of made a big bonus.
I mean, there's so many things that they didn't even talk about that we don't even know about.
Yeah, there's 3,000 new APIs in Lion alone. I mean, much less all the new, there's 250 new features that by their count in iOS 5. I mean, it's kind of mind-numbing. And there's lots of small stuff. They changed the toggle switch design. They're now like little, like round radio buttons, like an Atari 2600 instead of the square things. Like lots of stuff.
Just little
tweaks. You won't know
stuff.
Until you start playing with it and see the stuff that they reveal.
I will be downloading the iOS 5 on my iPod tonight.
I will be going and installing it on my iPhone and iPad within the next couple of days.
So we'll have next weekend.
Well, we won't be able to because we can't break the NDA.
But we can
talk about what other people are talking about.
We will be talking about this new company called Banana, and they make these really cool phones and music devices.
Reeve Hobbs is their charismatic leader.
Reeve Hobbs and Banana. It's the wave of the future.
Yeah, they're very innovative. So
we won't be talking about that.
No. But maybe some other people have written stuff that we can talk about.
Right. Maybe. We're just going to discuss what others have talked about.
Exactly. That's the best way to do it, I think.
Exactly.
And those people will talk about everything, so we'll have lots to talk about. So that's kind of it. It's
it is a lot. I mean, like, this keynote went on for over two hours.
Yeah, it was one of the longest ones I've seen.
Yeah. And normally they're like an hour and done.
Yeah.
Like in and out.
And there was stuff that was supposed to be in there, like, you know, voice control stuff using this technology from Siri, the Nuance technology that apparently was all ready to go as soon as earlier this week that got pulled, you know, earlier last week that got pulled the last minute. The mobile product head for MG Siegler was reporting on this tonight. Head of Siri was there today. And they didn't talk about anything.
Right.
And he actually may start working at Apple, supposedly. He may be a recent Apple hire. So there's definitely voice stuff happening as well.
It'll probably, they'll combine it with the launch of the new device.
Well, yeah, because there's got to be – because here's what's crazy too. This is the stuff they're pushing that's just iOS 5. There's going to be a whole new suite of features that come out with the new iPhone.
Right.
On top of this.
Correct.
Really, really interesting.
So that's our keynote recap.
Yeah. And, you know, long story short – a cohesive vision for how all your all Apple's products are going to fit together, utilizing the cloud in a way that. And here's what's interesting: this is them truly flexing their muscles in terms of owning the whole widget. Right now, everybody can compete with parts of this, but just as a cohesive solution, no one can really match what they're doing with everything because Google doesn't have the desktop component. Microsoft's too far behind with both desktop and mobile at this point.
Yeah.
For the next couple of years, they're kind of the only people that can really do this across the board.
I'm very curious. I mean, I'm really excited about all this, and I think it's interesting. I'm very curious to see how people take to it.
Yes,
because it's such a change. Will people completely embrace it, or will there be some fumbling along the way, or, only time will tell, but yeah. It's going to be interesting to see the reaction to this stuff.
Yeah. I think
in daily use.
Definitely. I think there's going to be fumbling, but I think why this has a better chance of being widely adopted than perhaps the Chrome OS strategy mm-hmm. is that your stuff is still on your device. You're still interacting with it.
Which I really like that.
Because our devices are still personal. Like my computer is still what feels safe to me, And I feel just inherently less secure if I'm doing a web app because it's not, mm-hmm. it's somewhere else. It's not here.
Well, it's syncing with a hub, that concept of syncing with the hub, the spokes coming down.
Yeah.
That concept really resonates with me.
I agree.
As a concept.
Because I think all of our devices, the way we use devices and the amount of devices we have, it's all this has changed so rapidly. The old paradigm in terms of the Apple digital hub as your computer doesn't work. Like you really want to go and have all elements of your computing life, which is increasingly becoming your social life and your personal life. You want to have access to it everywhere without limitation, without restriction.
Right.
And this is the first, broad step towards that. There's lots. I mean, obviously there's stuff here that's, not going to work right or well, I'm sure. And there's disadvantages with, different ecosystems and that kind of stuff. But in terms of one of the big, the big three in terms of Google, Microsoft and Apple, their solution as a cohesive whole, very promising and very exciting.
Agreed.
Cool.
More to come.
Anyway, thanks for listening to the special edition.
Ba-da!
I'm Brian.
I'm Scott.
Take care. Predicated big words, smart kid.
Big words for big people.